Today, the RBA's messy day and why rate cuts might be delayed again. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, not this post covering finance and proper news. Well, it was a busy day at the RBA on Thursday as their July 2025 bulletin was released, including important analysis on how international students impact the Australian economy and housing. And also Michelle Bullock spoke at the Anika Foundation fundraising lunch and warned that the Reserve Bank of Australia's preferred measure of underlying inflation may not fall as quickly as anticipated, implying that an interest rate cut next month is not guaranteed. So I'm going to pick up these themes and pick them apart today with an important caveat. We need to realise the RBA has an agenda too and is walking its own narrow path, having hopelessly misled many on the promise of ultra-low rates sticking around during the low era on one hand, and more recently having surprised the market in holding the cash rate last time around because of the risks of sticky inflation as the government initiated payments to support households, aka election bribes, I wonder, rolls off on the other. Michelle Bullock said that the central bank expects headline inflation to fall to the lower part of the 2-3% target band next week, but thought it would bounce back towards 3% at the end of the year as temporary government electricity rebates expire.
So if you cast your mind back to 2022, you might recall that inflation was higher than it had been in decades. It peaked at 7.8% at the end of that year in 2022. And it was this rise in inflation that required a tightening in monetary policy over 2022 and 2023, with cash rate peaking, increasing from almost zero to 4.3% over that hiking period. Over the past couple of years, we have made meaningful progress in bringing inflation down. Higher interest rates have been working to bring aggregate supply and demand closer towards balance. We expect headline inflation in the June quarter to be in the lower half of our 2-3% target range, but that's headline, and that partly reflects ongoing effect of temporary cost of living relief. As that relief unwinds, we expect headline inflation to pick up to around the top of the band by the end of this year and into the first part of 2026.
She noted that the monthly CPI indicator, which is volatile, suggests that the fall might not be quite as much as forecast back in May.
We do expect trim mean inflation to fall a little further in the June quarter in year-ended terms. However, the monthly CPI indicator data, which are volatile, suggests the fall may be not quite as much as we forecast back in May. We still think it will show inflation declining slowly towards 2.5%, but we are looking for data to support this expectation.
The so-called trimmed mean inflation measure, though, is still expected to fall a little further in the June quarter in year-ended terms, at 2.9% in the March quarter. Year-ended trimmed mean underlying inflation was under 3% for the first time since 2021, Bullock said. Turning to the labour market, the RBA governor also suggested economists overreacted to a jump in the unemployment rate to a still remarkably low 4.3%, which was reported last week, arguing it was not a surprise to the central bank and the labour market remains tight. While the June monthly data showed a noticeable pickup in the unemployment rate, other measures, such as the vacancy rate, have been more stable, she said. More broadly, leading indicators are not pointing to further significant increases in the unemployment rate in the near term. Bullock said that other labour market indicators, such as the job vacancy rate, layoffs, and liaison with businesses, remain stable and do not point to a further significant increase in the unemployment rate. She also pointed to unit labour costs for businesses rising strongly, largely due to stagnant labour productivity. At the same time, nominal wages rise. The implication of all this is that the RBA Monetary Policy Board would not be spooked by the rise in the official unemployment rate to 4.3% in June from 4.1% in May, as reported last week by the ABS. Last week brought us the latest labour market data, which confirmed that the unemployment rate increased in the June quarter, Bullock said. Some of the coverage of the latest data suggests this was a shock, but the outcome for the June quarter was in line with the forecast we released in May. While the 4.3% jobless rate for the month of June appeared to be a touch higher than what the RBA was anticipating, it was actually in line with the RBA's 4.2% forecast for the June quarter after jobless rates of 4.1% in April and May. Bullock pushed back on claims by some RBA critics, such as former Labour Minister Craig Emerson, that the central bank was striving to increase unemployment to its estimate of full employment, which is around 4.5%. Following her address, the government was asked if the board would have cut this month if it has access to the latest jobs report. "I don't believe so," Bullock replied, adding that she wouldn't overinterpret every single number. Our goals of low and stable inflation and full employment are closely linked and generally reinforce each other, she said. Much of the rebalancing of demand and supply in the labour market that has occurred in recent years has been reflected in declines in job vacancies, hours worked and voluntary job switching. There are many ways the labour market can adjust. The RBA doesn't target a specific outcome like a certain unemployment rate or number of job losses to reach full employment. So all up, she underscored that a measured and gradual approach to monetary policy easing is appropriate and the central bank would await the consumer price index for the June quarter to be published next Wednesday. It means a decision on whether to cut interest rates for a third time this year at the central bank's meeting on August 11th and 12th will largely hinge on the June inflation figures next Wednesday. Money markets, though, are still pricing in a 98% chance of a rate cut next month following that speech. And financial markets are betting the RBA will cut two more times this year while paring back the probability of a third reduction to 40% from 76% on Wednesday. As the AFR reported, Westpac chief economist Lucy Ellis said Bullock's speech signalled that an RBA rate cut next month was still not in the bag. "You can't rule out another split decision," Ellis said. "Anything above 2.7% trimmed mean inflation may make the RBA reluctant to cut interest rates. But it's unfortunate that small variations in inflation become so consequential, even at the same time that somewhat larger variations in the labour market are, well, brushed off." Following the RBA's hawkish remarks, we saw three-year government bond yields extend gains, adding about 3 basis points. That's a 7 basis point increase over the day, actually. And the Australian dollar also gained about 0.3% across the day. Incidentally, next Thursday, Deputy Governor Andrew Hawser will appear for a fireside chat a day after the closely watched quarterly data on consumer prices is released. Now turning to the international student question, new Reserve Bank analysis contained in the latest bulletin suggests that international students in Australia exert more pressure on demand in the economy, including in the housing market, rather than adding to supply. Surprise, surprise. In the housing market, supply is constrained in the near term, so changes in the number of international students in Australia could impact market outcomes in the same way changes in the population more broadly could, the RBA's Madeleine McCowage, Harry Stinson, and Matthew Fink said in a research paper published on Thursday. McCowage and Stinson are from the RBA's Economic Analysis Department, and Fink is from the Economic Research Department. Traditionally, Treasury assumes that immigration is essentially going to add to both supply and demand reasonably evenly, suggesting that they cancel each other out in terms of impact. This means a bigger Australia washes through to a bigger GDP. No worries. This research comes as the government has tightened visa rules for foreign students in response to a once-in-a-generation housing affordability crisis. In the aftermath of COVID, international students accounted for more than half of Australians' net overseas migration, with their numbers soaring to 560,000 by the end of 2023, from just under 300,000 in 2022. The RBA's analysis shows that student grant visas have fallen since the middle of 2023, though their numbers on shore remain near record highs, with arrivals exceeding departures. And then actually, Tuesday's net permanent and long-term arrivals data from the ABS suggests that immigration is surging again, with a record 245,890 net arrivals recorded over the first 5 months of 2025. And it appears that the surge in arrivals has been driven, at least in part, by international students, with the ABS reporting 39,210 students arriving in Australia in May. That's an increase of 1,200 students compared with the corresponding month of the previous year. May 2025 saw a 14.4% increase in student arrivals compared to the pre-COVID levels in May 2019. And separate Department of Education data suggests that the purported crackdown in international student numbers has not come to fruition, with record enrolments recorded in the year to April 2025. Actually, education is currently Australia's fourth largest category of exports, worth around 50 billion Aussie dollars in 2023-24. But this does not tell the full story, as first, I still question whether this is an export at all. It's measured the same way in other economies, by the way. That doesn't make it right. And second, many students in Australia remit money back overseas, so no way is that an export. In fact, since 2000, the total amount of annual export revenue derived from education exports has risen by a massive 558% in inflation-adjusted terms. And meanwhile, service exports, excluding education, rose by a mere 28%. Recent analysis of the national accounts by economists at NAB found education exports, which captures spending by international students living in Australia, was equivalent to a 0.8 percentage point of annual GDP growth, or more than half the 1.5% annual rate up to December. But as Leith Van Onselen over at Macro Business shows, the ABS incorrectly classifies all spending by international students as exports, despite the fact that many students pay for their goods and services with Australian dollars earned while working in Australia. And remittance outflows are really important as well, since money leaves Australia, and the volume of net remittances outflowing has closely tracked the volume of international students studying in Australia. Actually, the World Bank released migrant remittance data for 2024 recently, which challenges the notion that international education is Australia's fourth largest export. According to that data, Australia's net remittance outflow was more than 15 billion Aussie dollars in 2024. And a new report by Money Transfer Australia, which draws on figures from the World Bank, the ABS, CNOMAD, and DFAT, estimates that around $5 billion US dollars worth of remittance was sent to India alone from Australia in 2024. The massive outflow of remittances should therefore be counted against the ABS mysterious 51 or 50 billion educational export figure, which wrongly counts all spending by international students as an export, regardless of how it's funded. The real export figure is clearly far, far lower. So, I've got to ask, why did the RBA team miss this obvious issue? Instead, they pointed out that higher demand for housing could spur more dwelling investment over time. For example, generate a supply response like purpose-built student accommodation. With rapid growth in building approvals in recent years, they said, but that's a seriously lagged response and puts immediate pressure on housing stock, as we continue to see. No wonder rents continue to climb higher. And the RBA also claimed that spending by overseas students as they set up home in the new country was also an important contributor to growth in consumer demand and prices following the pandemic. But here they really are scraping the barrel. Interestingly, the Bank of Canada in 2024 found that newcomers affect demand sooner than supply, and that this unevenness contributes to inflationary pressures in some sectors, particularly, guess what, on house prices and rents. Well, well. So the RBA analysis does ask the right question, but they've hooked the analysis, perhaps as the truth would be, well, perhaps a little too inconvenient. Finally, I note that the ABS will begin publishing a complete monthly measure of inflation from November, addressing a long-standing gap in the nation's economic data. The first figures will be released will be for October, the Australian Bureau of Statistics said on Wednesday. That will bring Australia in line with most of its developed world peers. The ABS will also keep publishing its comprehensive quarterly series for now to provide continuity. With the advent of the complete monthly CPI, the quarterly series will be based on the average of the 3 months. Australia currently only releases a partial monthly consumer price index figure based on a very limited basket of prices, making it prone to revisions and less effective in capturing underlying trends. The Reserve Bank of Australia has frequently cited the lack of timely inflation readings as a challenge for policy calibration. The RBA Governor, Michelle Bullock, earlier this month said that the current gauge is a little too volatile and not quite representative of what's really going on with inflation. So, what do we make of all this? Well, first, a rate cut at the next meeting is not a certainty. Second, the RBA, as it often does, appears selective in the analysis it undertakes, as illustrated by the hooked student migration question. And third, the Australian data compass, well, remains broken, at least for now. All up, it's a bit of a mess. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.